Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Be the Vessel podcast. My name is Daniel, and I play the roles of channeler and intuitive psychologist, aiming to bridge all aspects of the healing arts while navigating my return journey to the stars. I interview those journeying through all aspects of healing, whether that be from more traditional Western frames or from a more spiritual or spirit-based connection. What I always find is that everyone is a bridge between worlds, a universe unto themselves, and a unique light that shines brightly for the collective. If you like what you hear and are interested in more of my offerings, consider joining the Be the Vessel community at patreon.com/DrDanielAtkins, where you will find various unique offerings, bonus content, and podcasts such as my own channeled information and the new Be the Vessel healing series. May you find what you're looking for and remember the light within. And lastly, the views in this episode do not represent my personal views, nor are they to be taken as medical advice or scientific fact. Always do your own research, come to your own conclusions, and trust your own guidance. With over 2 decades of expertise in the realms of sex, intimacy, and relationships, Rebecca Beneteau is a seasoned life coach and energy healer. Her journey has been enriched by comprehensive training at the Lafayette and New York Moore House, as well as graduating from the esteemed Barbara Brennan School of Healing. She also draws inspiration from the transformative practices of Access Consciousness. She specializes in guiding midlife women and couples, empowering them to rediscover and reignite their sexuality. Her mission is to empower people to choose a more fulfilling, pleasurable life through self-discovery and by fostering deeper connections to their bodies, their sexuality, and the people they share those things with. Rebecca and I had a riveting and pleasurable conversation about the pursuit of pleasure and the letting go of pain. May this episode be an invitation, a gift, and a medicine to own your orgasmic pleasure wherever it may be found and wherever it may lead. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks so much for having me.
So we were connected by someone I recently had on the podcast, and we had a lovely conversation with Cedes, and you guys met through the Access Consciousness. Is that right? Or another way?
Yep. That's where we first met, when I became a Access Bars practitioner.
Yeah. One of the many energy medicine tools you've explored. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I'm also an explorer as well. So that's something we'll definitely dig into, and as well as some of the other trainings and schools that you've mentioned and that I've seen in your materials. One place I feel guided for us to start, though, is in this theme of hiding or hiddenness. It just sort of came intuitively to me. It feels relevant to really all healing stories. But with your sort of creative expression of self and sort of sexual awakening and diving into that, that world, it feels, when I was reading your materials, it just felt very opening, like opening to yourself, discovering yourself, the authenticity of who you are. I mean, you know, and that's, I would say that's a core aspect of all of our journeys. So it felt resonant to begin with. If you could speak at all to, in your personal journey, that idea of feeling hidden or hiding, and how you grew from that place from an early age.
Thank you. What a beautiful question. So much of what I became is who I always was, but didn't allow myself to be.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's true of a lot of us, you know, that we come into the world with these amazing gifts and curiosities, and maybe even, you know, like a soul decision, like, wow, the world is really hurting around this particular issue. So I'm going to go down there and I'm going to take it on and I'm going to heal it so that I can heal everybody. Right. So I think I came in with that, very particularly, you know, it's interesting. My Chiron is where it's located, which I think it's Pisces. All I know is that wherever it is, I looked it up and the first line was, what a great sex therapist you would be. And I was already doing that. So I was thrilled. Like, I've been interviewed by several astrologers because my chart so clearly talks about what I'm doing now. Like, I'm in my lane. And there's, you know, there's a million reasons why we hide. We want to fit in. We want to be accepted. We, you know, and my mother growing up was very concerned with what it looked like on the outside, not so much about what was going on the inside. You know, I grew up in a household with a lot of rage from my father, actually from both my parents, but they did it differently. Dad was a screamer. Mom was a stonewaller, right? And all that really mattered was that nobody knew how much misery was actually happening in our house. You know, so I became who I needed to survive in that environment, both the gifts and the bad habits, shall we say. And sexuality, of course, is one of the big ones because it's so uncontrollable in a way. Like, nobody knows why we're turned on by what we're turned on by. There, you know, there's no scientific basis that they can find yet. They just know that people look at a certain image and poof, all the pleasure centers in their brain light up, right? So the most common question I get from my clients is it normal that fill in the blank? And I like to say that normal is only a setting on the washer. And so much of my journey, and it really started for me, I would say, in my late 40s, where I finally was like, this is it. I've got one precious life. I can't keep living it according to how other people are going to view me. So I'm going to let my freak flag fly. And my freak flag is not just about my sexuality. It's also about my spirituality. I, you know, I choose how to drive by which street looks brighter. Angels talk to me, right? I can look at people and go, oh my God, you know, you're borderline diabetic. And like, that's weird, right? And of course, when I was hiding it, and then I had to develop, you know, then I was uptight and anxious and drinking and everything else so that I didn't let any of those unacceptable parts seep out. Until I stopped and I let it out deliberately, purposefully, and then it didn't have to sneak out anymore.
Do you feel like that discovery, ownership, and opening of your sexuality was directly parallel and maybe the direct entryway to your spiritual growth? Like, did those openings parallel each other?
Yeah. I mean, I think they were both sort of happening hand in hand. And this level of self-acceptance that I got around an area that most people find taboo to talk about, I found very empowering. Because it allowed me, I don't know, a level of self-acceptance, comfort, potency that I'd been hiding from myself until then.
Yeah, it's a topic that has so much hiddenness and taboo around it, and has so much conditioning of shame and unworthiness around it. So it's as good as an entryway as any to go into sexuality and the wounds around sexuality, particularly if they're poignant and pertinent, to guide you to the core for all aspects of our life, which are similar wounds, similar limiting beliefs, emotions, expressions, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you identified that. It's like we each kind of pick our way in. You know, the goal is communion with self, communion with the divine, communion with everything, right? And so we pick our way in. So for some people, it might be business or money or wherever that stuck place is. And then, so they'll come to me and they'll be like, well, I want to have better sex, or I want to accept this kinky part of me. But really what they're asking for is that communion. And this is just the door we're opening to get onto that journey.
Right. Yeah. There are so many different entryways. Each of our minds has a different built-in sort of entryway system, just like the idea that different things turn us on, different things can be received as an entryway for growth, whether it's just different kinds of spiritual language, whether it's religion, whether it's community, whether it's on your own. And sexuality is a potent one. It's a potent force because of how much trauma is built up around it, frankly, because trauma for most of our human history has been a potent vehicle for transformation.
Yeah, and this is the question I'm really asking, is that what if we did not have to catalyze our growth through pain? We didn't have to catalyze our growth through trauma. And so far we have. Okay, great. And so you can't necessarily undo what happened to you, but you can choose a more empowering context for how you view it.
Yeah.
And in my next lifetime, I would like to, that's why my book is called Own Your Pleasure, Find Your Power. Because this idea that if we are willing to look at what lights us up and follow it, instead of constantly picking at our scabs, which is how most people do the work, right? We just keep looking at that wound and then we open it back up and now it's bleeding again and then it heals over for a little bit. Like, what if we didn't have to pick our scabs? What if we could just go, wow, this amazing thing happened to me. It was really painful at the time. What can I make out of it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that idea a lot. Like you said, up till now, that has been sort of the primary vehicle for our transformation, but it does not have to be ongoing. And there, I think, is a lot of possibility for us to simply expand and grow through creative expression and pursuing our highest light. It's taken us a little while to acknowledge and identify with what that light is, because there are so many layers of conditioning. But with, I think, this awakening in what we call trauma, there will be more and more opportunity for the new souls coming in to more quickly sort of activate their highest light, with maybe not having to go through as much of the treachery, because up till this point, no one really escapes childhood unscathed, as far as I know. But moving forward, maybe childhood really can be that light that just launches kids into their destiny, rather than thing that we then go back to and process in therapy for 40 years after. So it's a journey, but I do see that possibility, and I really I look forward to it. And I also saw just from reading your through some of your materials, speaking of sort of that future vision of a new paradigm of walking our path that does not have to be driven purely by picking the scabs or exploring the pain. In another way, something I like to say is, rather than always looking for the shadows, if you just go toward the light, if you just grow toward the light like plants, everything in your way will show up. Like, you don't have to go digging for pain. Like, that's going to come. You don't worry. Don't worry. That's going to come. You know, because that's what comes as we walk toward the light. But sort of in line with that vision, I saw that you wrote, "I see a future where a new paradigm around sex and relationships is possible." And I was just wondering if you could speak a little bit to that vision, or and what some aspects of that new paradigm of relationship and sort of modern love might look like.
Thanks for asking, giving me a chance to articulate that. I mean, so the new paradigm would be one where each person individually is encouraged to grow into their highest self, to be as big and brilliant and beautiful as possible without, like, what happens now is couples, people get into a relationship with a capital R, and now they suddenly start doing things to keep the relationship at the expense of their individual growth and soul. It's more important, right, to have a boyfriend, to have a husband. And, you know, what would it be like if we just recognize that everything is perhaps transitory, right? Like if you could be with every person you were with as long as it served everyone's highest. So there's that level of like nurturance, caring, allowance, honor that infuses relationships. So that's the paradigm I'm looking at, like an openness. Like I'm not saying everyone should be polyamorous and have lots of lovers. I'm saying be deliberate about it. Like look at all the possibilities, look at what works for you, look at what works for your partner, be willing to create from that new space. And the sexual reality is one where no one's ashamed, where no one carries the burden of wrongness around because of what turns them on. So not only are we living our best light, our best life, our most lit up, turned on life, right? Because, so this is one of the things that I've discovered, and I discovered this when I was an energy healer, is that the energy that runs through me when I'm working on someone is very similar to the energy that occurs when I'm having an orgasm. And that what orgasm actually is the unimpeded flow of our life force. Boom, mic drop. It has nothing to do with body parts rubbing together. And everything to, that's one of the ways you get there, but there are lots of other ways that you can get there if you are willing to strengthen your vessel and allow that to move through you. And when that's moving through you, what on earth can we create?
Yeah. And I can certainly resonate with the idea of sort of what we, you know, have identified as specifically like sexual orgasmic pleasure, with my experience of energy work and energy healing. Like just, having been on energy healing tables, like bursting out laughing, feeling like I was having a psychedelic experience. And outside of that, you know, when I was healing from more debilitating chronic pain and things, feeling like I would describe it as like emotional seizures, like energy moving up my spine. And still when I receive work, when I practice more energetic work with others, my body shakes. When I channel, my head shakes and my eyes roll up. And it's not exactly the same, but it's similar. There's because when you start to sensitize to that energy, it's like you can feel it when it's up in the head and you can feel it when it's down by the root. Like you can just feel it. And so there are different sensory pieces to the parts of the body, but the energy source itself is like the same. It's just like moving around and expressing in different ways. So I definitely relate to that idea.
Mm.
And then, you know, so yeah, so it, just exploring that idea of the transitory nature of relationships. Obviously, all relationships are transitory because in the end, we leave the body. So our relationship with the body, let alone other people, is transitory. But just in terms of some of the more traditional practices that sometimes create an idea of or a different idea of commitment or foreverness, how do you feel about the idea of something like marriage?
I mean, I think marriage is great if it works for you, but it's really a marriage was a legal process. It doesn't really have it, romantic love in marriage is a very recent occurrence, like the last 150, 200 years, something like that. For most of history, people have gotten married to solidify political alliances, the transfer of property. Still today, you know, most of my friends get married because of the tax breaks or the health insurance. You know, if you require that level of, you know, that piece of paper to make you feel married, okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I like getting married. I've been married twice.
you like it. Yeah. Maybe you'll just keep going. You like it so much.
It doesn't seem like I like staying married. and might I get married again? I don't know. Maybe. Would I like to have another, like, great love affair that just, like, makes my heart pit-a-pat when I see that person. Would I like to see God through sex? Hell yeah. That's really for me, like that's the longing that, and for a lot of people, that is like what happens. The French call orgasm le petit mort, right? The little death. Like there's a part of our ego self that dies away when we let ourselves go into that process of orgasm.
But it sounds like since, there's nothing necessarily inherent spiritually about marriage, that maybe that can be that doesn't have to be the primary intention or the first consideration in partnering with people. Like if those other parts are going well, if there's that, little death through love and merging, even though those things can be transitory and the relationship can enter different states and there can be different reasons why you would want to commit to someone in that way or co-create with someone. Marriage can be sort of that, it doesn't have to be the primary consideration. It could be a few steps down, like, okay, things are working in this way. Things we want to grow spiritually together. Maybe we want to create together. There is that sexual pleasure we have together. Marriage seems, yeah, marriage seems like it would fit rather than maybe some of the intention a lot of generations have, maybe not younger generations now, but that it's like a search for marriage, as if marriage itself is the goal rather than some of the other things you mentioned, like the communion, the expression, the sexuality, the co-creation. It can still be a part of the picture for various reasons, maybe still some of those other reasons, those practical reasons you mentioned, maybe just doesn't lead the way.
Like there's like relationship is actually the space between two things. And I guess I'm interested for myself personally and for the world in creationships. Like my second husband and I were very clear that we asked, like, this is his prayer, by the way, for anybody who's single that he said before he met me, God, if there be someone that my being with would serve you better, please hook us up. And so that relationship was very much a creationship, and we created a community in Philadelphia. We ran a commune together. We, touched the lives of like hundreds of people and changed them. And so I guess my new paradigm would be about being conscious all the time throughout your relationship and being willing to be aware of what's here now, what's working, what's not working. Is our purpose together complete? Instead of going unconscious to all the little ways that that person really irks me, or that I'm not really happy, or they're not really happy. But if I don't look at it too closely, it'll go away. Instead of being willing to do that deep work and just look at each other and be like, how can I love you better? And the answer to that might be let me go. Or it might be help me change this.
And it reminds me of the way I've seen exploring like what I would call divine love, which is that communion with source and which really applies to all things. And what I might refer to as human love, which sort of takes the form of that more romantic love and partnership and sort of honors the separateness that we perceive in the human form. Like we do have individual bodies. And so it is sort of a coming to a magnetic coming together and attraction between bodies, whether it's with one person or multiple. And sort of for me, seeing that, allowing that human love to play out, like not having to resist it and be an ascetic monk. Like I think I've done that in past lives and I'm good on that. But staying conscious of what the ultimate goal is to support and scaffold divine love and to not and to be aware if we're sacrificing that journey to hold on to some idea of the human love, which is sort of meant to be potentially more transitory or to change or to just stimulate growth into the higher forms of love. So I wanted to jump around and just go into that, the commune idea you mentioned. Does that relate to the Lafayette Morehouse, if I'm pronouncing that correctly? Because I was looking around at your materials and it seemed like that sounded similar to what you just said.
Yeah, yeah, that was, they would not call themselves a commune. They're a school. They were set up as a school for relationships, communication, and sensuality in the Bay Area in the 60s. And they've been living together basically ever since. They stopped being able to confer degrees in 1985, but they were actually like a degree conferring university. And at one point, I think they had, close to 100 communal households throughout the country in the 70s. So I discovered them in the mid 90s, and I studied with them, and I eventually lived with them and learned from them. Yeah, they just had this idea that life was more fun lived with other people.
Yeah. And so how did you discover them? What guided you to them, and what was that experience like?
Well, what guided me to them, I was in the Barbara Brennan School of Healing. And one of my friends discovered a satellite group of Lafayette Morehouse. And she came to me and she said, I'm going to go and do this class where a woman is in orgasm for an hour through manual stimulation. And I went, what? Ew. No, weirdos. So I wasn't interested. And but I guess around the same time, one of the teachers there looked at me and said, you're a sacred prostitute. I see you. And I went, what? Like, I had no idea what that meant. I was married. I was not particularly sexually fulfilled because I had childhood trauma around that. And so I didn't really bring my body to bed with me at that point. Right. So anyway, eventually this same girlfriend started holding social evenings at her house called Mark Groups. And I would go, and they were conversational, and I got to meet these folks that were living together in Yonkers, New York. And I called them the silver lining people because they always found the empowering context for, I would call them up and complain about my life or complain about my husband. And they would like continue talking to me until I figured out what was absolutely right about it. And the idea is that everything in your life is created by you. And it's perfect because no one would purposely create a crappy life for themselves. And therefore, you created it. You can also create it differently because even though it's perfect, it's perfect, including the potential for change. But if you find it right to begin with, it's easier to get to better than it is to go from bad to better.
Sacred prostitute is a powerful name. That should be that should be like one of your titles.
Yeah, except that PayPal would probably cut me off and stop letting me collect money. But I mean, it's a very powerful archetype. That and the idea of being a sexual healer, which is someone who allows the energy of Eros to transform and change situations, be that for healing, for money creation, whatever. It's being willing to be in that flow.
Yeah. So it sounds like that commune, that sort of lifestyle experiment. So it sounds like sexuality was a big part of it, if they're putting on events like 1 hour orgasms and things like that. What was it a very, I think probably the stereotype is that everyone's just sleeping with each other. Was it kind of that way, or were there different boundaries at play to explore relationships?
It wasn't like that at all. And that's what a lot of people think. I mean, how they made their living as a group was doing research and then describing their findings. And they realized early on that in order to live together successfully, they had to handle certain topics, which were money, communication, and sex. And then the other thing that they discovered was that a community was as prosperous as its women were happy. And so there was a lot of attention paid to what the women wanted and helping them get it. Centrally, so it, one of the things that happened was that the founder's wife was not able to experience orgasm. This was in the 60s. You couldn't even say that word on the radio or TV. And all their research led to a book, a doctor giving them a book on living with your frigidity. And Vic Barranco said, that's not okay with me. So they started their research. And what they found was that they could get a woman through manual stimulation to orgasm for an hour. And actually for many hours, like the ultimate was like 5 hours, but the kitchen went on fire spontaneously when they were doing that. And that's why I'm saying there, like there's a huge potency in this energy. So it's, I don't know how else to describe it, except that it's life changing. And I don't just mean your sex life. So they had this technique and they taught the technique and we hosted classes on all these topics, menopause, communication, jealousy, money and possessions, like, but you know, most of the people within the community were partnered. But there was an exercise that we do that's called doing deliberate orgasm that doesn't have anything to do with romance. It's purely a technique. It has a set period of time, 20 minutes or half an hour, where both people's attention is on one person's crotch. And through that, they just create an energy and you go for a ride. And then when it's all done, you go, thank you very much. And you go your separate ways.
Wow.
So that for me was the beginning of recognizing that sensual touch, which we have so long made a moral choice and like you have to be in relationship in order to enjoy it, rather than it's just a means of self-care and self-nurturance for your body to allow yourself to be touched in that way.
Wow. Yeah, I have a lot of questions that came to me. One is how powerful a practice, because yes, and I'm sure even more so at that time, there were the moral, religious, and social connotations of, you know, sex within marriage, only sex within partnership. But also, even now, just what the stimulation of sexual pleasure does to the mind, it sort of convinces you that you may love this person, that you need to be with this person. That all comes from culture for sure, but there is all that conditioning and linkaging. So when you're a teenager and you feel sexually attracted to someone, no one has to tell you, you think you're supposed to marry them because you just feel. So we don't understand that feelings are like waves and that they're more for us than they are necessarily an objective meaning-making machine about the world and about other people. And I'm a very, actually, you know, my sort of discerning power is based in my feelings, but for that reason, I have to ride the waves. It's not necessarily like feelings aren't facts. They inform my guidance system, but it's a much more fluid dance, and particularly in relationships. So I say that to say that the practice of just being willing to explore it as a pleasurable growth process within the community, without it, you know, with most people being partnered, and I'm assuming you're not just doing this with your partner, you're doing it with, you know, to navigate that, that's, there's so much growth in that. I mean, I have to imagine that some feelings would come up around it, but it's an amazing intention to have in growth process. And it also elicits the idea that, so there was a lot of focus on sort of the divine feminine, it sounds like, and accessing the divine feminine and supporting women. And it brings me back to that idea that sexuality can be an entryway for spiritual growth, just like all different kinds of entryways. But at that time, you know, there might not have been, or maybe there was, but this may have been, it sounds like the energy healing modality was through the orgasm. Because like you said, it's such a potent force. And that's the way that Vic Barranco or the others were guided to hone that force was like through female orgasm and to rise the vibration of the whole community was, does that resonate, that sort of the divine feminine energy and the orgasmic sort of potency was the way for the community to sort of like delve into energy work in a way?
I don't know that they would describe it in that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, knowing what I know, I mean, there's a bunch of things. The most important thing I feel like I got out of my time with them was a feeling of rightness to want what I wanted and feel entitled to ask for it, mm-hmm. which is something that historically women have not felt connected to. We put others before ourselves and we put ourselves last, and we don't even know what we want and we don't know how to ask for it. And so this process of doing, one of the things that happens is that you learn a technique for communicating, like, wow, that feels really great. Could you move your finger a little to the left? And the person goes, yeah, and they do it. And then you're like, wow, that's even better. Thank you. And like, so I learned how to ask. I learned how to find my voice. And the goal was not orgasm the way people traditionally look at orgasm, which is climax, you know, huge explosion, and then you fall asleep or you can't be touched or whatever. It was very much about riding a wave of energy and following the flow of that energy and the arousal, and it would go up and then it would go down and then it would go up. And we weren't looking for the big peak. We were looking for having it feel as good as possible for as long as possible. And, you know, they've put people in MRIs while they're experiencing sexual pleasure, and they've seen what that orgasm and what that arousal process lights up in the brain. It's actually more than playing chess or doing crosswords. So if you want to live a long time and fight Alzheimer's, come a lot.
Yeah. And so of course, there were those ideas you're speaking to about female empowerment, but not just about female empowerment, about communication without shame, about acknowledging what you desire and asking for it, which of course extends beyond sex. It's like the willingness to have what at least appears to be an uncomfortable conversation, but to speak your truth. So it sounds like there's a lot of that working with a subject that can be considered heavily taboo. But then there's also, yeah, this idea that, you know, it's like you're engaging in the practice of Tantra, or which has so much relationship to the yogic traditions that are not just based in sex, but sort of the Kundalini energy, you know, the practice of the breath and sustaining, you know, and not just sort of peeking out, but how to sustain and integrate this energy so you can walk around with this energy. You can walk around with this consciousness. You can be the light. It reminds me of also like the work of Joe Dispenza, who, you know, was a chiropractor and energy healer and healed himself, and now has very well known books and workshops around the world and everything. But in one of his earlier books, you know, they were putting they were doing scans on the brain, you know, putting electrodes on the brain, whatever, and we're showing the brain just lit up in, you know, what he would call ecstasy, you know, quite similar to the word orgasm. And so just through, you know, and they were not accessing it through stimulation, but through meditation and other forms. But so I feel this overlay and huge entryway to that, what we're calling like the divine union, the divine ecstasy, through that pathway that sort mm-hmm. of we have innately.
Yeah. I mean, Morehouse would never use that language. It just wasn't how they were wired. You know, right. They were a bunch of hippies in the 60s that all got together and created this lifestyle. But certainly my research since then into things like, as you said, Tantra and other things, there is that aspect of the divine feminine and moving through and, you know, the energy of Shiva and Shakti, right? The energy of Shakti is this birth energy, is this creation energy, that is accessible. And we want, and I guess the other thing I want to say is just think about how you feel after you've had a good orgasm, right? The whole world looks great. Nothing bothers you. Someone cuts you off on the highway and you're like, eh, so what? Right? So why would we deny ourselves the possibility of living from that space all the time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much neurochemically that's happening through that process. Like there's clearly, you know, beneficial things to explore and to research, like you said. Mm-hmm. Because as someone who you know, is interested in feeling good, and I think a lot of, you know, people, you know, that's the main goal is feeling good. I would say, I would go out on a limb and say it's the main goal for everyone. We have interesting ways of going about it. But yeah, as someone who's interested in the possibilities and exploring the highest heights, and someone who has done that in various ways, a lot of the ways didn't serve me anymore. But you know, if there are healthy ways to go about it, sustainable ways to go about it that are life giving rather than life taking, or that lead to dependencies in all forms, then let's do it. Let's explore it and let's see what's possible.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think really what I'm getting from this conversation and what I hope the listeners are getting is this idea that consciousness is everywhere, and you can, you know, can you bring your consciousness to your sexing and your relationships, and can you use your sexing and your relationships to increase your consciousness?
Yeah. As well. And like, replace sexuality with any other thing. Can we relate to the world in every aspect of our life as something that supports our consciousness, and something that we can use our consciousness to support that aspect?
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to go back to what you mentioned, which was the Barbara Brennan School of Healing, which was a different form of energy work, different form of energy healing. Although, was it at that school that someone told you about the 1 hour orgasm thing? So obviously this was a school with a lot of open-minded individuals exploring consciousness. How were you guided to Barbara Brennan and her work?
Yeah. When I was pregnant with my first child, I was working for the Hard Rock Cafe in New York. I tell you this because I think it had something to do with it. They had at that time what they called the God Wall, which was all these different representations of God. And the founders had been followers of Sai Baba. So there was this huge picture of Sai Baba that I walked by and looked at every day. There was, you know, an Allah and a Mogen David and all these things. And one day I just started hearing things and seeing things inside my head about people. Like before they knew they were sick, I was getting messages. And then a friend of mine went into a drug and alcohol induced coma, and I felt I would go to his hospital room and put my hands on his head and shine light into his head, because that's what I was told to do. And he woke up.
Told to do, you mean by your own inner guidance or by?
Yeah. Yeah. By my own inner guidance. And I mean, it wasn't new information. Like I'd been kind of a psychic kid. I vividly remember a time when my dad took me to the track and I kept picking the winners until people started doubting me and making fun of me. And then I like shut it down. But you know, I went to college, I read tarot cards. I was always like on the quest. But then this thing happened and this friend said, you know, there's this woman. And at the time, Barbara Brennan, it was the early 90s. She had this book, Hands of Light. Reiki was not that big a deal. I mean, energy healing was not really a thing. She's like the OG to me of this world. But she was giving a lecture at the New School in Manhattan. And I went to see her and I told her what I was doing. And she said, I would not let my experienced healers do what you did with that man at that stage of pregnancy. She said, I can see the energy that shines out of your hands and out of your heart. But, you know, you need to be conscious and careful. And I was like, wow. And then my daughter, well, my kid was born. And I had the book Gathering Dust, and then when Mariah was like a year and a half, I don't know, I suddenly got this like compulsion to find out more about it. And I went to a weekend that was the prerequisite to her 4-year program. And I had a very like deep experience where I saw angels and I felt all the energy moving. And I just realized, you know, what turns me on the most of all in my life, Daniel, is when you take someone who's a light bulb and you turn them just that little bit more so that they suddenly make the connection and their light goes on. Like that to me is the most ecstatic experience. And I saw that I could get it there and I signed up for the 4-year program with no idea how I was going to pay for it. And several, you know, serendipitous things happened. And it's a really comprehensive program.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I did it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I see a lot of overlap in an energy modality I was trained in called pranic healing, because it was actually, I believe, the grandmaster Cho Kok Sui from the Philippines created it in the 90s as well. And a lot of the language was about your hand, because you use your hands. The hands are the tools. So it's like there was a lot of this almost like clairvoyant information in the field around the hands and how we use the hands as powerful tools for the energy to flow through. Because there's literally a book in pranic healing called Your Hands Can Heal You, and all the imagery is about your hands full of light, and so the Hands of Light book. So I just love those synchronicities that I find sort of in the field about when things develop and people that didn't know each other getting similar clairvoyant information about. And Master Choa was very, he was this bridge between science and spirituality too, because he spoke a lot about pranic healing as like a medical tool, and his books were almost like textbooks about the protocols you use for each diagnosis and things. And it just, I just get this sense, just hearing you speak about Barbara, that she was a scientific mind too. And I did look up a little bit about her. I saw that she just died a couple years ago, actually.
He did. Yeah, and you're right. She was a scientist. She worked at NASA actually on weather satellites. And she suddenly started seeing auras. And that kind of took her on this other path. And she started following the path work, which was channeled information. She became a path work helper. I'm not sure if she just, I know she was involved with John Pierakis and the Core Energetics Institute because they came and taught us. And yeah, you know, these ideas are out in the ether. And it's not that anybody stole from anybody else. You just can't copyright the truth. So they come through a bunch of different mouthpieces, and people will hear it from the person that they can hear it from, which is part of what I love about this. I don't know a lot of people who are like me. So often I reach people who would have no clue about energy healing or no clue about connecting to the divine or tantra. But they're led there because they find me because they're interested in learning how to spank. You know, or people come to me because they're very spiritual and they're working with the angels, and then they're like, oh, you know, I might be interested in something else. And that could, yeah. So they get to learn about something new, very different, because I sort of bridge these worlds.
Yeah, and I love that word bridge, because we're all a bridge for something. And so regardless of how sort of the entryway that people find us through, just your people being in your energy field is going to invite them, if they're open and ready, to expand in a way that they hadn't considered when they first saw you or were first connected to you, which is sort of how my journey has unfolded, because I started changing things quite rapidly, and the way I show up started changing. And so the reasons people were coming to me before were not the reasons, was not the nature of the work ultimately, and then not the reasons why other people came. So it actually feels really important in this new paradigm of healing that, if you don that name, or if you're interested in guiding others you remain open to the way the medicine will flow through you, that what you call yourself for a period of time might not be what you call yourself later on. What someone came to you may not be what they end up getting, which is, I think, sometimes what can be a limitation of a more diagnostic-centric process is like, oh, okay, you have depression, so let me look up in the book the treatment that we're going to do for that. It's like, well, maybe that's just a label for some dormant sexuality or something they just need to uncover and explore in the relationship with someone's energy field.
Right on. Absolutely. I totally agree. And that's always my ask when I work with someone. You know, I'll ask them, if you could get anything out of the session, what would it be? But even before that, I ask the universe, you know, what energy can I be to be what this person desires, requires, and can receive?
Yeah.
Because some people, and I'm sure you've experienced this, come with a presenting condition that they actually don't want to get healed from, but they think they should.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's something you said earlier that took me back to that fact as well. But, you know, it was about feeling good. Everyone wants to feel good. The funny thing is that some people feel really good about feeling bad.
Yeah.
And so that's what they want to hold on to, because that's how they know how to feel good. And we can just present them with possibilities. We can present them with an energy that then they choose to use. And it might move through what they presented with, the symptom. It might move and shift something else that's underneath that symptom that had to clear first. It might show up completely different. And that's what I like to ask sometimes, particularly when something crappy happens in my life, Daniel, is like, is this the change I was asking for showing up?
Yeah.
And very often it's yes. And then I'm like, oh, okay. So I just got to like hold my nose, keep walking through the shit pile, and it'll become something else. And just trust, you know, trust the process.
Yeah, it supports this idea that all of life can be a medicine if we allow it to be. That whether you're explicitly seeking out healers and frameworks and different languages of growth, you know, the circumstances in our life, you know, attracted by the energy field that we carry and all the karma and everything else and what we set out and intended to do in this life, reveals itself as this invitation for us to not resist and to walk through. And that, like, the microcosm of that surrender process can happen in relationship with someone like you, where it's like, okay, yeah, I showed up with this one thing, and if your ego is so hell-bent on healing that one thing, but that thing actually isn't ready to heal yet, it's actually meant to invite you to discover something about yourself, then we may just keep grinding ourselves and miss the signs of what it's inviting us into, which, you know, I relate very personally to my own process through chronic pain and sickness. And, you know, I think a lot of people, depending on what they're struggling with, it can engender a lot of shame, especially if you pride yourself on spiritual growth. If you pride yourself on being a healer, and you're like, oh, but there's this one piece I haven't been able to heal yet. It's like, well, there's a reason. We're still learning from that thing. And it's not an indictment on your growth process. It's just an invitation to keep going.
Yeah.
So you mentioned about the sort of the psychic gifts and capacities that you had really since when you were young, and that's sort of what guided you to Barbara Brennan and to that program to understand it through the lens of energy and I'm sure other ways. How do you see that now? How do you integrate that explicitly into your work? Is it something that just flows in, you know, in alignment? How do you relate to those gifts now?
Well, I would say that it is explicitly part of my practice. When someone coaches with me, they know that I'm going to work with them verbally, mentally, and also energetically. It just happens. I don't even, you know, I was going to say, when we're talking about hands, that I experience myself now as not just working with my hands, that like I can feel the energy moving between me and the person that I'm working with. It's all one piece. It's not separate for me. So when I coach with someone, or, you know, when someone comes and gets on my table, or we're doing long distance work, I prefer to work with people who also are willing to be aware of what's going on, not just like, hey, can I lay on your table and will you fix me?
Yeah, it's like, you know, because I navigate this a little bit too. You know, when you integrate, let's say, talk therapy, for lack of a better word, speaking with people, you know, conversation, expression and healing through the voice, communication, as well as, you know, forms of energetic communication that can just be hands-on. There is the allure of, oh, can you just do the energy thing so I don't have to like talk or necessarily even be conscious of the wounds. But, you know, as I see it, I think there can be a misunderstanding about what energy clearing is. It's not just like taking away the trauma. It's just clearing a path to experience it consciously and work through it. It's kind of lubing the channel for the feelings. It's not a bypass of the feelings. It's not just taking the anger out of you. It's creating a pathway for what's been stored, blocked, repressed, held, constricted to open and flow. And so that's not always pleasant. I was just seeing a client who was like, should we do more of the pranic healing stuff? And I was like, honestly, I don't get that sense, because things have been very growth oriented already. And if you lube too much, you know, you don't, it's gonna, it can be tricky. And the integration piece of all, with all medicines, whether it's energy work or plants or whatever you might be working with, the integration piece, the bringing it into consciousness, the giving voice to it and allowing it to manifest in your life and your circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it boils down to, as intuitives, right, I ask and then you do what's required. So sometimes it is just energy. Let's just work with the energy. You lie down, you relax, we're integrating, we're whatever. And then sometimes it's talking through. And, you know, from my growth as a healer has really been because at the Brennan School, I think that we sort of saw ourselves as the source of people's healing. You know, they came with a thing. We got a sense of where there was too much energy, too little energy, and we put our hands here, here, and here, and boom, you know, they walked away healed. And now it's really much more about, I provide an energy that then they get to choose what they do with, and I don't decide what they require. That's not my job.
Yeah.
I'm more of a catalyst, and not the difference between a catalyst and a source.
I resonate with that, and I see that maybe as a consequence, because it's similar in the pranic healing lineage too, as, you know, I think probably for very good reason, source chose some vessels that were very scientifically minded to be bridges for energetics like Barbara and like Grandmaster Choa to sort of open doorways to the Western mind, that this can be used in conjunction with sort of a medical frame. And I actually think that that will continue to expand as there are more technologies and advancements in ways that we can see energetics and really prove this as a reality that we live in an energetic world. And I think that will lead to a greater understanding of healing. But I think maybe one of the consequences of that more medicalized approach is that, yes, you come with the thing, you come with the with what you're struggling with, and we have, it's not so different from going to see a therapist for depression and then having you're treated for depression. Like if you're going to an energy healer who uses, because there's literally like a book of diagnoses in pranic healing. If it's just like, okay, I have this, and now I'm going to apply this, and in 3 days it will be gone. it's not leaving a lot of room for the idea that we actually heal ourselves. And in divine timing, if we're guided to a healer and we're ready to heal, we will. And if we're not, we won't. It doesn't matter how much we want it or how good the healer is, so to speak. So that has definitely been my journey, continuing to explore and honor the nature of showing up as a vessel and trusting that people will get what they need to get. And sometimes what they need to get is resistance or things not working or feeling like they failed or whatever. And the practice of not taking that personally, or of course, is always personal growth and growth as a healer, but right. Trusting the divine encounter to unfold as it needs to.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Absolutely. So I just want to, can we take 1 second? Because I would just love to, since we've been talking so much, I would love to invite everyone listening to tune into their body. Because you and I have had this amazing connection and very expansive and heady conversation. And so just, and not to leave that behind at all, but to bring the body with us and just notice what are you aware of, what everyone's aware of in their body, where is their tension, where is their relaxation, where is their excitement, where is their blood flow? Because if people have been willing to stick with us this long, I really want to help them change some stuff too.
Love it.
And now to just allow your awareness to expand to the very edges of your skin and then out and beyond and keep going as far as you as a being go. And then notice that wherever you go, there you are, right? Is there any limit to how far we can, as it, we are as a being? So are you being inside a body, or are you a body inside a being? And then just kind of bring your awareness back into your body and noticing, like, I notice the cells on the front of my body feel very alive and tingly. There's some tingling moving down my arms. My lady bits feel awake and excited. Yeah. And what would it take for us to move through the world integrated as body and being? Mm. All of it. I don't know why I felt drawn to do that, but there you go.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for the invitation and for inviting everyone who's guided to listen to this to participate as well. Mm-hmm. How do you practice or allow your body to guide you forth?
I love that question. I listen to my body and I ask my body about everything that concerns it. And I use a couple of tools. Sometimes I muscle test, you know, by putting my fingers together and pulling. Sometimes I use a pendulum. I've gotten very good at just reading the energy. So I'll ask, like, what is my yes? And what is my no? My yes is sort of softening of the front of my body, a relaxation, an expansion, a lightness. You know, like, would you like to go to the beach? Yes. Would you like to get a root canal? Oh, I noticed that my shoulders want to hunch. It's heavier. It's more contracted. So then I'll ask, like, body, do you want to eat? Body, do you want to eat this? Body, what do you want to wear? I will go through my wardrobe with my eyes closed, and whatever feels the softest to my fingers, that's what I want to wear that day. And then I practice with those little things. At a restaurant, I'll take my glasses off and open up the menu, and whatever I can read the most clearly is what I eat.
Wow, that's an adventure.
It is, especially since I'm mostly vegan. Because sometimes my body will be like, I want that. I'm like, really? You want a pork sandwich? And it's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. And I eat it. It goes down great. I guess I need whatever nutrients are in it. Tomorrow I go back to tofu. But yeah, you know, that's definitely a place where I guide my clients through this listening to the body. And then, of course, you can extend it to people. What will my life be like 5 years from now if I go on a date with this person? instead of like, oh, too fat, too tall, too young, too hairy, sounds like they're broke, whatever, which is what usually guides are swiping, but just asking what can be, what will be created if I go on this date? What will be created if I kiss them? Light and expansive, heavy and dense.
Do you, so there's a lot of surrender in that process. Ed, do you trust your body as your highest authority in that guidance?
Yeah, I would say I do. Because the brain, man, the mind is a little calculating machine that only can predict based on what it's experienced in the past or the data other people have given it. And most of that was given to us by people with their own biases and fears and, you know, children are to be seen and not heard. Don't let people know you're down, whatever that message is, right? So that's what the brain will tell us. And that's how it decides what we should or shouldn't do. The body is incapable of lying because it just reads the energy. Yeah. Much more reliable.
I'm with you on that. And I surrender to my body a lot and have grown to acquaint myself with it very much. How do you, so let's, in that example of body, do you want a root canal? And the body goes, fuck no. But you kind of do need a root canal. How do you discern sort of the fear or constriction of the body in terms of what is truly not right for you, or what might be a fear that maybe the larger aspect of you that is relating to the body can help the body move through an initial fear or constriction reaction to do something that will actually serve you, if you have that experience?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first thing I want to ask is, are you sure you need a root canal?
Sure.
Right? Like, you know, because how much of what you've done to heal yourself is not what other people would have predicted. It's not what the Western medical model would have recommended. And yet it's what worked for you. So we go, but we go automatically to this place of, I've got tooth pain. The dentist says I need a root canal. That's the only thing that's going to work. So the first question really is, what will my life be like 5 years from now if I get the root canal? That's the question. And it's not, do I like it or do I not? I just use that as an example because most people would not choose getting a root canal as something pleasurable. So it's something the body will go about. But if your body really requires a root canal, like my body sometimes requires a ham sandwich, it will tell you. If that's the best way, you know, if people come to me and they're like, I have cancer, but I don't want chemo. And I'm like, really? Because sometimes you need to stop the body dying before you can teach the body how to live. And then, yes, then we'll ask the questions. Is this, you know, what am I refusing to be aware of? That if I would be aware of it, would let my body heal this with joy and ease. And then I journal. And it might be, go get the damn root canal. Or it might be, go see this person, go use this supplement, go use this toothpaste, let, you know, lose the tooth. Right? We have this idea that, oh my God, if a tooth falls out, it's the worst thing that could ever happen and I'll be so ugly. I don't know. Maybe that tooth is holding onto something your body and your system no longer needs. And if you were willing to let go of it, your whole freaking life might open up into more and better health. Like, if I've learned anything in these last, especially my involvement with Access Consciousness, which we haven't really talked about a lot, but we're going to be here forever, Daniel, because this conversation is so fascinating.
Got plenty of time.
You asked such great questions, right? But this idea that, like, I don't really know anything that I think I know. I have so many prejudices and judgments and decisions about what things mean and what things are and what things will change them that I can't see what they actually mean or what will actually change them. And the more I can let go of what I think I know and just be in this state of open receptivity, that's where the juice is.
Yeah. And what I receive from what you're saying is that it's about learning to use the body as a tool for communication. You're not necessarily saying just because something scares you, there's your answer. But you are using the responsiveness of the body to ask good questions and to have a conversation. Like, because this is something that I sort of consider a lot is, and people will ask me this a lot. Well, okay, if you're following your intuitive guidance, you're following what lights you up, how do you know when fear in the body is a real sign that there is a tiger there and you should probably leave that space, or fear is the fuel for your transformation? Which is something I say when we're guided to do things that will support transformative growth, there's fear, but we can work alongside that. Something I'll come back to is, usually if it's something we're meant to ride through in pursuit of more growth, there's probably also going to be a little bit of excitement. There's probably also going to be a sense that, but if I didn't have any fear, this would be amazing, you know, and it would be, you know, and root canal is not a great example. I broke both my front teeth are fake, and I've had a lot of root canals, and it's probably never something I would just do again. But there are other things that I could see, oh, it scares me a little bit, but it would be amazing to do it if there was no fear. Maybe that's a good question is, okay, body, I see that you're scared, but if this didn't scare us, would we want to do it? Is there something that we could see value in doing? And then still, maybe you choose not to, but it sounds like, you know, like you said, the body doesn't have an agenda. It's really just a communication device. And if we can learn to honor that, not necessarily just react impulsively or unconsciously to everything the body wants to do, but listen and use it, work with it, amplify it, tune into it, rest it, let it be a guiding force. That's how we can continue to surrender in this thinking process, because thinking is not knowing, as you were alluding to. Thinking is its own game. Thinking doesn't really know what's right or wrong. Thinking just thinks it knows. And so that's a different rabbit hole. The body can be a simpler communication.
Yeah, right on. You know, one of the things we do in Access is, you know, everywhere I've misidentified and misapplied excitement as fear, can I destroy and uncreate that and let that go? And you're right, you know, the markers for excitement and fear are exactly the same physiologically. And your question was, how do I know when it's really a tiger? You ask a bunch more questions.
And sometimes you just run and then you learn later.
Sometimes you just run and you get the chance to make another choice, you know? Yeah. Like if you run, okay, forgive yourself, allow. Like, you know, I used to think I had to always push myself to do something every day you're afraid of. And, like, I think we're done with that kind of growth path. I think the path now is more to love yourself into change and you don't have to do what you're afraid of.
Yeah.
You have to do what you're excited about and do what you love and figure out, am I excited or am I really afraid? And even if I am afraid, what am I afraid of? What will actually happen?
Yeah, it really feels like a process of openness is the individualized way, because there are so many frameworks around, you know, there's a large culture now around, you know, just spiritual growth is the Nike motto, just do it, you know, just get in the cold plunge, just, you know, biohack your system and take 60 supplements and eat raw meat, you know, and whatever it is. And it's like, and I have a little bit of that wiring, you know, and it comes from my conditioning as a male or just my power. I can push myself really far, but I had to learn the hard way that my body was just going to crumble, and it did. And so learning softer tools, like, oh, okay, there is this other side of the coin that is like, what if I just practiced only doing what lit me up and it wasn't a game of self-punishment? And sometimes there is a dance about, enacting your will. Like, will is a good thing to have, but to use it in a dance with surrender, rather than, right, because I think some people like, you know, that date, that David Goggins form of growth, where it's like, if your only form of growth is like, just run 30 miles a day, no matter how you feel, well, that could take you pretty far, but mm-hmm. there's a ceiling. I feel there's probably a ceiling to that, and exploring whatever is pushing you to do it that way, and explore other realms of love and light can absolutely be a part of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right on. I am not going anywhere near the cold plunge.
I will say it's great. I will say it feels good. I mean, it doesn't. Well, here's the thing. It doesn't feel good, but it feels good.
Yeah, right. I got it. And maybe one day I will. You know, I just ask my body every time people are like, oh, the cold plunge is Sunday. I'm like, body, do you want to go? I get a no. I go, okay, fine.
Yeah.
And another question I love, and I asked myself this yesterday morning because I was just not feeling like doing anything, was what energy, space, and consciousness can I be to be the laziest MF on planet Earth and have it be a profit for me and everyone around me? And just let myself be that too without resistance, right? And but ask for it to also be a contribution, rather than try to force myself to be something I'm not feeling or not actualizing in the moment.
Yeah. And actually what it sparked in me is, for those sometimes like myself who do feel that sort of producing results growth-wise in that hard-earned way is the only way that it feels good, you know, the question can be, how can I rest today in the way that actually feels good to me, rather mm-hmm. than a way where I'm doing it, but I'm feeling lazy and I'm punishing myself and I'm not thinking that I'm doing good enough. Mm-hmm. How can I rest and allow the energy to still feel expansive or serving? Because that can fulfill the quota for a challenge for the day. If you want to like reframe the language, that can be the mm-hmm. challenge mm-hmm. is to find ways to enter deeper rest, because most people know how to work hard. Most people have no idea how to rest. A lot of the times it involves substances or other things and mm-hmm. going places or doing things that don't actually make you happy and you feel like shit after. So, that can be a good exploration.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So tell me a little bit more about Access Consciousness. Like, what is it something you still, because I know CDs was saying, you know, and I'm familiar with some of these, the framework of some of these lineages, because I'm going to a healing retreat actually at the end of this month for the energy work by Donnie Epstein. It's called Network Spinal mm-hmm. Analysis. So there's retreats, there's things, there's events, there's, you know, sort of can be lifelong training, etc. How are you relating to Access Consciousness now? Is it still something you know, do meetups and connect with people around and learn and continue to learn from?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of these things have like two parts, right? There's the body of work, and then there's the organization, the business organization. And the body of work of Access Consciousness is amazing. The tools are amazing. I've done multiple trainings, invested quite heavily with them, went all the way up to one of the highest levels of certification. And it led me to realize that I didn't want to any longer be a certified facilitator of their work. I wanted to use their tools in my work and my purpose. But I still regularly meet up with other practitioners to exchange. I regularly do the particular modalities, including access bars, access body processes, energetic facelifts, symphony possibilities, the pieces of their work that I'm certified as a practitioner in. Because I'm a tool slut. I will use whatever works. And it doesn't, you know, That's it. I paid for it. I bought it. I learned it. It's mine now. And I will also mix it up and mix and match it and change some things around. And that's so when someone comes for work with me, they're not getting purely access or consciousness or purely Barbara Brennan. They're getting what I call pleasure and potency healing, which is everything that I know and everything that I'm capable of to answer the ask that you have, the longing that you have.
Yeah. And I am that way as well, a tool slut, if you will, because it's just my nature. You know, whether it's my rebellious nature or just needing to go my own way or chart my own path, I just feel like it was written in my soul contract that I am not one thing. I the longest process I went through was to become a clinical psychologist. And then almost immediately after getting licensed, I was probably the fastest retiree in history. And and then I was never going to just jump into something else. I could feel the safety in wanting to do that. Oh, okay, I left this, so what's my thing now? But it just became abundantly clear each time that I wasn't going to just be a pranic healer. I do, probably the thing I will say at my core is that I'm an intuitive, but the intuition flows in all ways, in all directions, and through all expressions and frameworks, because I'm very curious. I'm a very curious person. I like to learn different things. I also feel, you know, that that's not a judgment, because some people, it's really aligned for them, for their nature to identify and to grow through that thing, whether it is the clinical psychologist thing or the pranic healing thing or the astrologer thing. And I interview lots of those people because I love them and they're all so valuable to me. I also feel, or whether it's medical doctor or whatever, I also feel that a little bit of openness and flexibility as to where the journey may go, because sometimes, at least in the Western fields, you get that title and you stop growing in a way because you think you've just achieved what you needed, but that was just the beginning. So a little bit of flexibility in terms of the labels is great, but you could still be a completely exploratory person with your core professional identity being that one thing. So it can happen in many ways. I just learned that labels were never really my thing. As a kid, when I got a lot of diagnostic ones, those weren't my thing. And then as an adult, when I got ones that I earned, they still weren't totally my thing.
Yep. I hear you. You get it. It's an interesting exploration for me, like a growing edge, because I have definitely always been looking for a thing, a place to align myself with. Like when I went to the Brennan School, I thought I was going to go back and become a teacher. And I had my child, right after my graduation, I had my second child, and I never went back there. And then it was Morehouse, and I thought I was going to be a Morehouse person, and I was going to forever and learn their thing, and then Access. And it's like I'm always looking, I have been in the past looking for that credential that will somehow be the thing that make people take me seriously or want to work with me. And I'm really recognizing and embracing that none of that has to do with any of it. And to really start to walk my own way, whatever that looks like and whatever challenges that has, but just, I'm actually thriving more by just being me in business too.
Yeah.
Me as a healer, and letting go of those beliefs that I needed someone else or something else to legitimize my work.
Yeah. And that has definitely been my path as well. And I think, again, others, you know, I know people who it wasn't necessarily about needing to fulfill that worthiness or whatever. It just worked for them. But for me, it definitely was. I always wanted to be smart enough. I wanted to be good enough. I wanted the thing, the identity that would, yeah, make me credentialed, not just credentialed in my work, credentialed as a human being, as if I needed to earn that. And the more I went through these different credentials and got a lot of things that people feel good about, I was like, I don't know, it's not really doing it for me. Maybe I'm just Daniel, and that's great. And that the natural gifting flows through me, and that is so powerful, and it can take different forms, and I can play around with different things, but ultimately it's the natural gifting that leads the way. And beyond that, I'm not even that. I'm something much larger than that anyway. So I'll play Daniel. I'll play him well, to the best of my ability, to the freest that I can possibly be. And then I'll keep going. Yeah. So that's definitely in service of my sort of sense of freedom, of my astrology, of my human design as someone who just can't really be tied down. And also, but it relates to identities in other ways, because you said becoming a mother, right? That's a pretty big identity, or partnership, marriage, whatever. There are a lot of identities in life that we look to esteem ourselves, to validate our worth. And so I definitely find that a worthy pursuit to keep playing with. Like, I'm clearly guided to play with it because I can't just say nothing. It helps people. I still use the doctor part. It helps people know a little bit about where I come from, especially when I'm talking about aliens and things. They're like, oh, okay, well, it's not, you know, it's got other stuff. So there's usefulness in it. Well, I'm feeling like this, you know, this may be a very natural, fulfilling, pleasurable place for us to begin to wrap things up here. It's been a real pleasure. Yes. An orgasmic experience, if you will.
Thank you.
Yes. Talk to you, Rebecca. And so I'll just sort of leave open a question if there's anything else you feel guided to share. And then, of course, you know, where people can find you and things like that, if you'd like them to.
Yeah, I mean, it has been an ecstatic conversation. I really enjoyed myself. And thank you, you know, for being this beacon and collector of experiences and sharing it with people through your podcast. I'm very grateful. And let's see. Well, you can find me on pleasureevolution.com. I do a lot of things online, including pretty much monthly challenges for women who want to have better sex and relationships. But I'm planning perhaps a co-ed one as well. So people can find that. And I'm on all the social media spots as well. And I know you're going to put in the show notes that people can download my ebook as a free gift, which is The Sexual Authenticity Handbook, Own Your Pleasure, Find Your Power. So if that intrigues you, please come and do that. And let's see what else. Pleasure Evolution TV on YouTube. Lots more videos, me yakking away about all kinds of things. So that's how you can find me. And I work and I live in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. So,
right. We didn't even explore that.
We might have to have another chat in a couple of months. Who knows? But, and so I am available for you to kind of come on retreat as an individual or as a couple and work with me intensively while getting some, sun and sand and surf and swimming in our beautiful ocean, eating delicious tacos. So as I guess one thought I will leave people with, it's a quote from Oscar Wilde, why not be you? Everyone else is taken.
I love that. Yeah, beautiful. And thank you so much. And delving into that personal work and in that, the energetics of that landscape in Mexico sounds beautiful. I'm sure it's a very intentional and aligned reason for you to be there and grow in that place. Thank you for all that you do and for being the light. And it was my pleasure, and I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
All righty. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening. If you like the episode and would like to support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review anywhere you listen. And if you'd like to connect further, feel free to reach out on Instagram, my website, or my Patreon page at patreon.com/DrDanielAtkins, where for $5 a month, you can gain access to all sorts of exclusive benefits and offerings for the Be the Vessel community. This includes live channeled events, a new healing series podcast, and more. Until then, may you be the light, the frequency, and the vessel for your highest vision.